Blog Talk Radio.
About herbal medicine. We're going to do our best to give you good, clear advice that you can use simply and safely right now. Okay, let's see. I think I have some printed out questions here. And yes,
I'm here.
Okay.
I am.
Hi. Hey, welcome.
Just having a hard time getting online, but here I am now.
Okay, good.
I see there's somebody else in the room, but I'm not sure that they want to ask a question because they haven't pressed the number one button yet. So I'll look to see if the person who's here with us decides they want to ask a question. Otherwise, should we jump right into some email questions?
I think that's a grand idea.
I know we have an interview at 9 o'clock. That's exciting.
Yes, it looks like a very interesting person as well. We're going to have an interview with Veronica Drake, who's an international intuitive business consultant.
Yeah, that should be really interesting. I know I also handed you a couple of questions last week, and I'm wondering if we should use those first or if we should just hold those on to for the next week.
I don't have those questions in hand, but if you have
them
there.
Okay, let's go with the one I have right here.
Okay.
Laura would like to know, what do you suggest, if we're going to go right into serious topic right away tonight, what do you suggest for someone with tongue cancer? Could you include a range of dosages for your recommendations, specifically once the cancerous mass has been removed, and what is the best way to prevent recurrence and the need for further treatment in the form of radiation and or chemo? Prior to the surgery, was exercising regularly and eating a wholesome diet that included cruciferous vegetables and yogurt. Since the surgery, increased vitamin D and protein consumption, and now taking maitake tablets, I guess that's a mushroom, as well as daily eating shiitake mushrooms and seaweed and drinking green tea and violet leaf infusion. Thank you for considering this inquiry and for all you do.
Okay, well, the first problem that I have here is that I'm being asked to treat a disease. And I think that most of you have heard me say many, many times, I don't treat diseases. I work with people. So I do not have a clue about this person. Is this a female person? Is it a male person? Is it an undecided person? Is it an old person? Is it a young person? I don't have any recommendations for diseases. I don't have a recommendation for dealing with tongue cancer. I only have recommendations for people. So I'm not actually really going to answer this question, and I do invite you, please, to re-ask this question with information about the person. I don't even really know if this is you, because it was couched in this kind of third person. So, that said, drinking nourishing herbal infusions is always a good move. Young or old, male or female, undecided, tongue cancer, any other kind of cancer, no cancer at all, drink your nourishing herbal infusions. If you don't know how to make nourishing herbal infusions, consult my books, which are available at the Wise Woman Bookshop, or my YouTubes, which are at YouTube, and Comfrey is a infusion, comfrey leaf infusion, and it has the great ability to heal things very, very rapidly. So I often suggest to people who are electing to have surgery to use comfrey leaf infusion to help them heal after the surgery. I will also say that my book, Breast Cancer? Breast Health! The Wise Woman Way, has fairly extensive sections on helping yourself during chemotherapy and helping yourself during radiation. And the simplest things that you can do during chemotherapy is to take milk thistle seed tincture before the chemotherapy. It does not seem to work as well if it's taken after or at the same time before, and the window is an hour or two before that we need to take the milk thistle seed tincture to protect the liver, make sure that the chemotherapy works well but that doesn't harm the body. In terms of radiation, Hypericum perforatum, St. Joan's wort, St. John's wort, known by both names, the oil is used to prevent radiation burns. And it's used on all of the surrounding tissue. And I usually tell people, if you're going to be using hypericum oil, do not tell your oncologist or the radiation specialist, because they will tell you you shouldn't use it. I know quite a few people who've used it with amazing and wonderful results. No one has had any problem with using it. And so I do understand this is not the exact answer that you were looking for, but on the other hand, given the inexact nature of the question, it is the best I can do.
Okay. So did you have any opinion about the violet and those other things that they were talking about?
Oh, she didn't
seaweed,
ask me about
green tree. That. Yeah, the last sentence, it says, increased vitamin D, protein consumption, taking maitake tablets, eating shiitake mushrooms, seaweed, drinking green tea, and violet leaf infusion.
Right, but she didn't ask me for my opinion about those things.
Oh,
she simply
okay.
Told
me. Sure.
That's,
all right.
That's all I'm saying. She didn't ask me anything about Or he, I don't know who it is.
Here's the next question. You mentioned that you cook brown rice, etc., in whey. What is whey?
Little Miss Muffet sat on her tuffet, eating her curds and whey. Curds are the milk solids. Whey is the milk liquid. You take a gallon of milk, which weighs 8 pounds, and you increase the acidity of the milk, either the natural acidity of the milk, which is lactic acid, or by adding something acidic like lemon juice or vinegar or rennet. And the acidity causes the milk to break into curds and whey. You get approximately 1 pound of curds from a gallon, that's 8 pounds of milk, and 7 pounds of whey. I was just reading some information from Sally Fallon, who is also very much in favor of whey, and there's a wonderful book called Whey, the Healing Food, and she is vehemently against whey powder. She says that the whey is dramatically changed when it is put into a powdered form and should not be considered to be the same as real fluid whey at all.
Mm-hmm. I guess the same thing for the protein powders too, right?
Yes, she feels very strongly that those have no place in the diet.
All right. My daughter practices intuitive healing like my mom did. I have seen several times where my mom's sense took a left turn. How do I tell my daughter that her intuition needs to be tempered with wisdom?
Well, I'm disturbed by the connection between left and somehow wrong. I mean, I guess that's what she means by left turn. To me, there's just two, you know, there's left side and there's the right side, and I don't favor one of them or feel that one of them is good and the other one is bad, but that does seem to be the implication here, is that her intuition is somehow going to be bad. And, well, the simple answer is, Mom, you can't. Because the last person your daughter is going to pay any attention to at all is you.
The dad.
Not the dad,
yeah,
either. No. Not the parents. The parents' word is useless.
Mm-hmm.
Is your mom still alive? Can she talk to her? Grandma,
and need,
to granddaughter?
And people need often to learn from their own mistakes, right?
That too.
Yeah, you don't want to rob them of those valuable learning experiences with creates who they are.
As a matter of fact, you know I'm doing a course right now about how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the biggest factors for learning is making mistakes.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah. When they set people up at tasks and they don't allow them to make mistakes, the learning doesn't stick nearly as long as when they're allowed to make mistakes.
Hmm. Interesting. So the answer is do nothing.
Yes.
Alejandra would like to know if you have a date for the 2014 Greenwich Intensive.
Both the Greenwich Intensive and the Green Goddess Week are generally at pretty much the same time. I don't have a 2014 calendar in front of me, but you can look at the dates. The Greenwich Intensive is usually the weekend after the 4th of July. And the Green Goddess Week is usually close to the very beginning of August.
And both of those take place in Woodstock, New York, at the Wise Women's Center, and they are both retreats for women only, yes?
Correct.
Okay. All right, here's a really, really, really long one. Let me just look back at the thing and make sure there's not somebody who's waiting for us to ask them. I see a few more people here, but nobody has pushed the number one on their telephone to let us know that they want to ask a question. So we'll go for another person who emailed. I am so glad I found your site. I must be one of those unusual cases. I'm 41, and from what I recall, I was born with BV. I remember having a strange odor down there. When I had my first boyfriend, the smell increased. I couldn't afford a doctor, didn't bother him. It wasn't until years later when I had my second boyfriend that I knew something was wrong. I went to the gynecologist many times for this problem. Each time something new was prescribed, I've taken Flagyl, Diflucan, Metrogel, and so on. None of them worked, not even for a day. Two interesting factors. My mother also had BV at the time. For most of her life, could she have passed it along to me in childbirth? Only now that she's in her 70s has it stopped. I'm telling you, the odor is unbearable. Other thing is sugar. I've consumed lots and lots and lots of sugar. My story gets worse. I was sexually active with a man I knew for 12 years, and we were together for 2 minutes, but the relationship didn't pan out, and I met another man who's now my husband. About 4 months into our marriage, I noticed vaginal pain and sores. I had a discharge of thrush. I went to the ER and was diagnosed with herpes. I could have died. I knew that this person I had been with before my husband was the guilty party. To make matters worse, since then I've never been able to get rid of the symptoms. I know that herpes never goes away, and it's stored in your nerve cells for life. Every time my husband and I get together, we experience a lot of discomfort. I think my BV is making these herpes symptoms hang around down there. And then this email goes on and on. I think I've given you enough to give an answer. Oh, unless you want me to continue to read.
There's no question. I haven't heard a question yet.
Okay. Let's see. Do you have any other suggestions? Okay, well, I'll just keep reading. I've cut down on my sugar. I'll not give up my coffee. I mean to eat a non-sugar diet for life. Do you think that's right? I'm completely vegetarian, and I've been for most of my life. I rarely eat processed foods. I've cut out chocolate and nuts, which are triggers. I used to have acid reflux. Doctors told me to cut out all the food I ate, garlic, onions. I said no, and I ate everything I wanted to, and I got better. Now I don't think I'd be so lucky. I'm going to insert garlic capsules as a start into my vagina. I'm allergic to mushrooms. Do you have any other suggestions? I'm on a strict budget. Is it possible for me to still consume sugar if I can counterbalance it with something like cinnamon? I'm sure you have something to say. More than one
right.
thing.
Okay, so.
I know you're annoyed tonight, aren't you? Sorry.
Not at all. No, just went in the other room to get
and
a coffee.
And for the record, I'm not laughing at this person. It's just there's so many triggers in here I know that are touching you off.
Oh, no, not at all. I just, let's start here. She starts out by saying that she has bacterial vaginosis. For those of you who don't know what BV is, BV is a kind of catch-all term. And bacterial vaginosis means, basically, that there's some kind of bacterial overgrowth in the vagina. And from my book down there on page 154, it says, BV occurs due to an overgrowth of normal vaginal organisms, Gardnerella, vaginalis, and other oxygen-intolerant bacteria can be growing there. BV can arise spontaneously, or it can be sexually transmitted. It is the leading cause of vaginal complaints in the United States. It is often confused with yeast, and half of all women with BV have no symptoms. So right away, I have to say that my kind of skepticism kicked in. I was born with BV, she tells me, and I didn't go to a doctor. So how do we know that you have bacterial vaginosis? It's very difficult to diagnose.
And again, basically, what we're talking about here is vaginosis means that you don't actually have an infection. You have a pH in the vagina that is not where it needs to be. And I think that that is probably the most important thing for you to pay attention to, is the pH of your vagina. Now, how do we change the pH of the vagina? What do we do about that? And let's see, I think I have a chart somewhere in here. Let me see if I can give you the page number of that chart so that we can, yes, I think it's back here. Here we go, page 126. These are the things that make the vagina more susceptible to infection. Male ejaculate. So you say, you know, when your husband and you have, I'm guessing intercourse, you don't actually say that, but I'm guessing that. And if he ejaculates, that would definitely be irritating and change the pH of your vagina. A condom would prevent that ejaculate from getting into your vagina, and you could still enjoy yourself. Birth control pills change the pH of the vagina. Any kind of hormone therapy, whether it's menopausal, postmenopausal, or for any other reason. High amounts of sugar in the blood. Now, eating sugar does not necessarily mean that there's a large amount of sugar in your blood. And as a matter of fact, for most people, eating fruit, especially raw fruit, generally triggers blood sugar rises more than white sugar does. Antibiotics definitely change what's going on in the vagina. You didn't mention specifically if you had taken antibiotics when you were young, but then you gave me a whole list of antibiotics that you have taken and said that none of them did any good. Well, they couldn't actually do any good because you don't have an infection. And none of those antibiotics would get rid of bacterial vaginosis, and they would all generally tend to make it worse. Unusual stress, even positive stress like a promotion at work, a new child, getting married, moving to a place that you've always wanted to, any kind of stress is going to change the pH of the vagina and make BV more possible. Any kind of anxiety, any kind of fear, bubble bath. As a matter of fact, bathing in general is not recommended for women with chronic vaginal problems, only showers. Washing your vagina with soap is a big no-no. Please, never, 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 never wash your vagina with soap. If you need to splash a little water down there, splash away, but don't wash. Wiping from the back toward the front will bring the fecal matter toward the vagina. It doesn't have to actually get in there to change the pH. Douching, another huge no-no. This really changes the pH of the vagina, as does feminine hygiene spray. Artificial sweeteners are far worse in terms of vaginal infections than sugar. So there seems to be a real focus in your mind on sugar. I'm not so sure that avoiding sugar is doing you any good at all. As I said, raw fruit and fruit juice, much more problematic in terms of than actual white sugar itself. Notice that I have not mentioned white sugar on here at all, but I have mentioned artificial sweeteners, diet soda, raw fruit, and fruit juice. These things are known to contribute to changes in pH in the vagina that lead to this kind of chronic problem that you're talking about, but white sugar is not on that list. Saliva and other sexual lubricants can change the pH of the vagina. Hormonal changes during your menstrual cycle can change the pH. Menstruation itself can change the pH of the vagina, as can pregnancy. So that's a long list. What can you do to make your vagina more resistant to infection? Well, one of the things that you picked up on is that, of course, somebody comes to me with a problem and they tell me they're a long-term vegetarian. I'm just going to naturally believe that they, because they have eaten such a deprived diet, that they do not have the nutrients they need to be healthy. So if we were talking, I would talk to you a little bit about what you meant by being a vegetarian, because it's a word that's used fairly loosely and applied across a broad range of diets. But if you are eating, for instance, fish, then I would say that more important than the seaweed is to eat fish four times a week. You say that you're on a limited budget, and yet seaweed is enormously expensive, as are maitake mushrooms. Not sure that these things are going to be at all helpful for what you're dealing with. What does restore acidity and make the vagina resistant to BV is yogurt, both orally and vaginally, a minimum of half a cup of plain yogurt on a daily basis. And if you don't want to put the yogurt in your vagina, then acidophilus capsules can be inserted in the vagina. Ascorbic acid, also known as vitamin C, can be inserted into the vagina. You can get ascorbic acid pills and put one or two way up by the cervix. It has a very powerful effect on restoring vaginal acidity and getting these organisms, again, which live in the vagina. You don't have an infection if you have BV, right, back into their cohabiting bliss. Right, a salt water sitz bath. That's simply warm water with a handful of salt put in it, and you sit yourself down in it. Oh, and that's about a handful of salt in a quart or a liter of warm water. Or you can do a sitz bath with a couple of tablespoons of vinegar in a quart of water, a cup of hydrogen peroxide in a cup of water, or make a sitz bath with oak bark or any other astringent herb. So these are some general things in terms of keeping the vaginal environment in a good place. Back to page 154, help bacteria vaginosis, expect results in 7 to 10 days. Remember that every section here has a help box to help you get right to the point. Eat yogurt. Apply some vaginally. Take a dropper full of yarrow tincture twice a day. Try a garlic suppository, but don't, oh please, don't put a garlic oil capsule in your vagina. You could actually burn your tissues and have quite the mess to deal with. So please do not put garlic capsule in the vagina. It is raw garlic itself, and some women even don't peel it, and some women lubricate it with oil, and some women tie a string on it. Whatever works for you, just not capsules, please. And if you have a chronic problem, which you have described as a chronic problem, then you would be a good candidate for investigating Mayan abdominal massage, a non-invasive external massage which guides the internal abdominal organs into the position for optimum health. Mayan abdominal massage, MAM, can release both physical and emotional difficulties. And you can find more about this at www.arvigomassage.com. That's A-R-V-I-G-O-M-A-S-S-A-G-E, arvigomassage.com. Long question, long answer. Did you go in the other room for a drink? Think I was going to talk forever?
No, I just have to unmute myself. It takes me a minute to get back over to the place where I can do that. And I'm back. All right. Let's see. Let me just look and see if there's some people who are asking questions. No, there's a bunch of people here, but everybody's just
good.
Listening. So, let's see. Okay, so here's a question that's actually just come in today, and it says, Dear Susan, so glad to have this opportunity to ask you some questions, and I have so many. I have a daughter and a brother and myself not in the best forms. Maybe I start to write about myself. Recently, after a return from a trip abroad, I feel different in myself. Something feels like not quite me. I'm standing close to myself. It's a strange feeling, hard to describe. It's scary and not comfortable. Then it goes away. I realize nothing happened, so I become more relaxed. Today, I almost got a panic attack. It didn't last long. I realized it's just a panic attack and not stroke or a heart attack. I drink your infusions, nettle, red clover, lots of oat straw, linden, and chickweed. Sometimes I drink 3 quarts of oat straw per week. Is that too much? I'm 57 and I'm menopausal. Last period when I was 51. I try to eat healthy, lots of greens, no sugar or flour. I exercise. I'm married, reasonable sex life. I have 2 children, already grown. I work part-time. I like it very much. My brother is going to have an operation tomorrow. I won't read all the information about him because I think you only need to answer at least one thing to begin. And then there's 3 more paragraphs, two about her daughter, one about her husband. And then there's a second email added on that says, did I have a stroke? I feel when I'm anxious that my brain is active and on fire. Thank you.
I certainly can't tell from an email message on the telephone whether or not you had a stroke. I really appreciate your confidence in my psychic abilities. But I am not going to offer any opinion about whether or not you had a stroke. And I have been around people who have had a stroke. What I see is a slight droopiness on one side of the face, especially around the eye area, and aberrations in their speech, that they're not able to articulate as clearly or as well. And memory blanks, not just, oh, I forgot that, but like whole pieces of memory being missing. So you would need to ask yourself whether or not you had a stroke. My guess from what you're saying is that you are having anxiety attacks, and this kind of feeling of something being wrong is not only causing the anxiety attacks, but is, it's kind of like a circular thing going on. You have this uneasy feeling, then you have a panic attack, and then the panic attack makes you uneasy, and then the uneasy feeling brings a panic attack, and so on. Motherwort. Motherwort tincture really stops panic attacks and stops anxiety. No, 3 quarts of oat straw infusion a week is not too much. That's absolutely fine. I find that a lot of people who say that they eat greens aren't getting much benefit from eating those greens because they're eating those greens raw or steamed. So, oh, you greens, let's start cooking those greens. Let's make sure that those greens are cooked for a good hour before you eat them. Start there. And if you can come up and cook them longer, all the better. I am very comfortable with what you're doing, and the only thing that I would suggest that you add is the motherwort tincture that you have on hand, when you can take it whenever you're feeling that kind of funny thing. And if you don't already do a meditation practice, just a 3 to 5 minute meditation practice once a day, I think could be a very beneficial for you.
Thank you. I'm starting to get some bald spots. I see that my hair is thin but starting to grow back. I think it's alopecia. What can you recommend?
The hair and the scalp are often seen as very powerful indicators of our overall health. Losing hair is one of the consequences of eating a deprived diet. And that deprived diet could be a vegan diet, a raw food diet, a strict vegetarian diet, or even an ordinary low-fat diet. All of these diets, which do not provide adequate nutrition for a woman, can lead to thinning spots, hair falling out. I've told the story a couple of times, perhaps some of you have heard it, of local person in Woodstock who said, gee, everybody in Woodstock is famous but me. What can I do to get famous? And they decided the way to get famous was to write a book. And since they didn't have any particular ideas on writing a book, they decided what they would do was to ask all the famous Woodstockers for a recipe and then put out a book called Famous Woodstockers Recipes. And so they invited me to offer a recipe. And when the book came out, there was a big book signing, and everybody who had a recipe in the book came to this big place for a book signing, and we were allowed to set up a table to sell whatever it was we were famous for. So I was selling my books, and of course I was in the book section. There were other famous Woodstockers because of books. And I was right next to a woman whose books were all low-fat and no-fat. The no-fat cookbook, the no-fat soup book, da-da-da-da-da. Well, about halfway through the signing, she kind of leaned over to me with this kind of, you know, intimate, let's talk privately thing. And she asked me about her hair, which I could see was very coarse. And she showed me a patch on her skin, and it was very scaly and dry. And I asked her about her menses, and she said they were very messed up. And I said, well, I have to tell you that basically what we're looking at is the results of a no-fat diet. And our X for you is I want you to go out and buy a pound of organic butter, and I want you to eat that pound of organic butter in the next 6 or 7 days. And, of course, her look at me was quite horrified, and I didn't even really think that she would do it, but, you know, that was my advice to her. And sometime later, over a month later, I got a call from her, and she said that she had indeed gone out and bought the butter, eaten it, and was not looking back, was not reestablishing a low-fat diet, and as a matter of fact, felt terrible for even writing all those low-fat cookbooks and was never going to encourage anyone else to be low-fat again.
Right.
That said, we all remember that nettle, stinging nettle infusion, is wonderful for the hair and the scalp, and that it can be drink the stinging nettle infusion. And that in my green book, Healing Wise, there are also two different hair tonics, one made from nettle and one made from burdock seed. And you might want to try one or other of those. And that's the green book, Healing Wise, which is available at the Wise Woman Bookshop.
Thank you. Let's see. Is there a cure to help for manic depression?
Manic depression. So, usually I think that is called bipolar disorder.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it's characterized by people who have periods where they have lots and lots and lots of energy and can stay up, it seems like 24 hours and do kinds of things, and then that switches off to a pretty deep depression where they are just laying in bed and don't feel like doing anything at all. I know some people who are able to just work their life. They have creative pursuits that make their money, and they're able to work their life around their manic and depressive stages. So when they're manic, they're working, and when they're depressive, they're not doing anything, and that seems to work for them. In terms of an actual cure for people who are bipolar, the only cures that I have heard anybody talk about are shamanic cures, which basically is a very large investment of emotional energy and time and probably money, and not something that most people are really willing or interested to do. Meanwhile, we can be healthier by drinking nourishing herbal infusions. There is a mineral which is often given in pill form, and that's lithium. And there are many hot springs where the waters contain lithium. And these are places traditionally where people who have bipolar disorder go to drink the water. If you don't want to go to Montana or Arizona or places where you can get water with lithium, I don't think it's bottled, but I could be wrong about that. But I do know that you can get a prescription for it, and that it is helpful to people. And it is, for a drug, it's not a drug because it's a mineral. So it has far less side effects and problems than taking other kinds of drugs.
Thank you. Right. Let's see here. Hmm. Next question. I found your apprenticeship by a chance, and I fell in love with it. I've always been curious about herbal medicine, and I really want to study with you. I read about your shamanic herbal, simple herbal, and green goddess apprenticeships, and I became so excited. I think it's the most interesting offering I've ever come across, and I'd love to attend, but I really can't afford it. Do you have any options for me?
Well, first of all, let me say that the price of a live-in apprenticeship is $550 a week. That includes all of your classes, including Tai Chi twice a week and yoga once a week, as well as your classes with me and your room and board. And the fact of the matter is that that is a really generously low price. I don't think that there's any other program that I've seen anywhere where you would pay that little even just for the teaching, not to even mention the tremendous high-quality food that we serve you here. So what I always say to women who say, I really want to come an apprentice, but I don't have the money, is get the money. If you really want to come, then get the money. This is your first shamanic test. Can you get the money to do this? It's not a lot of money. It's a very reasonable amount of money. Let me give you some ideas of what other women have done to get the money. One woman who literally lived on welfare put aside a certain amount of money every single day toward her apprenticeship. It took her 2 years to save up enough to come for a two-week apprenticeship, but she was so focused on it that she said whenever she thought about going to a movie, she took the money and she put it in her apprenticeship jar. So that she saved ahead for what she wanted. Other woman, our named Belinda Belayan, who's now a teacher of herbal medicine, set up a raffle, and she sold tickets, and the first prize was 3 consultations with her after she'd graduated from her apprenticeship, and then the prizes went on down from that. And she sold those raffle tickets, I think, for $25 each, and she was able to make enough money to come for a 6-week apprenticeship. So that's what I offer you. In addition, of course, needless to say, I offer a huge amount of information, basically at no charge at all, at my website. Thank you, Justine, for the marvelous work you do there. We have a free e-zine with a recipe every single week, no charge of any kind at all for that. I also offer work exchange weekends here at the Wiseman Center and work learn days. You can come and work and learn with us and even get paid for doing that. Fabulous. If all of that still seems out of your reach, then I would suggest that you consider a correspondence course. A correspondence course can be paid in increments as small as $50 a month, and you get a lot of exposure to herbs and herbal medicine through that. And I also offer mentored programs. And you can choose a mentorship program with very low payments. I think the lowest payment is
$11 a month.
$11 a month.
11,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, 11. And then you're in the mentored program, and you have special information and teachings and teleseminars and things. So those are a variety of options that you have. At the Green Goddess Week, I do offer work exchange, but I call it comfrey women, women who want to do some work but not a lot, and nettle women, women who really want to do a lot of work. You pay in full for your Green Goddess Apprentice Week, and then you work while you're here, and at the end of your time, you and I sit down with your work log, and I write you a refund check for the work that you've done.
Thank you so much, Susan. I see somebody here who's in the room would like to ask a question. All right, Susan?
Sure.
Okay, I'm opening up the line here. Hello in the 207 area code. You can speak with Susan if you'd like to.
Hi, Susan. I'm a 64-year-old woman, and I've had this chronic postnasal drainage. It was really bad a few years ago after I'd taken some antibiotics. And I've done a lot of irrigation, tried different herbal irrigations. It's still there. It's better, but it's still there. And occasionally I get this really bad-tasting stuff draining down my throat. I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
The sinuses are small cavities in our skull, yes?
Yes.
And we have a goodly number of sinuses in our skull. The size and the shape of the sinuses in the skull is extremely individual. The sinus cavities themselves are lined with mucus-producing tissue. And when that mucus-producing tissue is healthy and in good shape, that it produces enough mucus to keep a flow going from the sinus down the back of the nose, down the back of the throat, and into the stomach, sweeping bacteria along with it. When the flow of mucus that's being produced by the sinuses slows down or dries up, then bacteria get into the sinuses, set up housekeeping, and create a discharge that, as you say, doesn't smell or taste very good at all. So I have often kind of teased that at some point I'm going to write Susan Weed's Mucus-Filled Diet Healing Book as a counter to Arnold Arendt's Bliss Diet Book. But we do especially want to improve the mucus flow. And at this point, we will also need something to help counter the bacteria that are going on there. My two favorite herbs for improving mucus flow are comfrey leaf and linden. I make a quart of comfrey leaf infusion by putting 1 ounce of dried comfrey leaf in a quart jar, filling it to the top of the boiling water, putting a tight lid on it, and letting it steep overnight. I make linden infusion by putting 1/2 ounce of linden flowers, I try to get them whole, the cut makes a pretty slimy brew, in a quart jar, fill it to the top of boiling water, put a tight lid on it, and let it steep. Both of these steep for at least 4 hours or overnight. When they're done, the liquid from the linden infusion is poured in a jar. The liquid from the comfrey infusion is poured into a different jar. And you don't have to make them both at once. I'm just talking about them both at once because we're going to do a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
The herb from the jar is put into a saucepan. So you put the comfrey in a saucepan, or you put the linden in a saucepan. And then you add 2 cups of cold water. And bring this up to a boil, turn the fire off, put a lid on it, and let it steep for 4 to 6 hours. That second brew is the part that is really going to affect the sinuses and affect the ability of those sinuses to pick up the pace in terms of making more mucus and keeping that mucus moving as it goes. So you can drink the first brew while you're waiting on the second brew to brew, or you can mix them together, whatever you like. There's no rules about it, just that we are making a second brew, but only of linden and only of comfrey, because they contain mucilages, which are slippery substances that are more extractable in cold water. So that's why we're doing our second brew with that. Cold water. Okay,
so
those
you just drink them, you don't use them to irrigate.
I personally believe that irrigating the sinuses drives bacteria into them and is one of the worst things you could do.
Okay.
I know that there are other people with very, very strong opinions that you should irrigate. I will tell you that my mother was plagued by sinus infections. As a matter of fact, her life basically was shaped by her desire to avoid her sinus infections. She lived as a young woman in a place that she loved, and she left there to go to Dallas, Texas, because it was hot and dry and less of a bother to her sinuses. And I, you know, figured that heredity being what it is, that I would probably have sinus infections too and not be able to live in a moist, cool climate that I also love if I did not pay really good attention to what was going on. And so I have always paid the strictest attention to what's going on with my sinuses. And any water of any kind up my nose or in my nose, whether it's from a swimming pool or a shower, oh, shudder, irrigation is to give me a sinus infection.
So basically, I would just drink that tea on a daily basis?
It's not a tea, it's an infusion. A tea
Sorry.
Is a small amount of fresh or dried herb brewed for a short time. This is an infusion. We're weighing out 1 ounce of comfrey or 1/2 ounce of linden, brewing it in a quart of boiling water in a jar, straining that off, then adding 1/2 quart of cold water and bringing that up. So that's 6 cups. And yes, you can alternate between the comfrey and the linden. You don't have to do it every single day. But certainly we need to, you know, see to it that things that are very astringent are moderated in your diet, like black tea is very astringent and might be something that would be difficult. Or if you frequently spend time in places where it's air-conditioned, which is extremely drying,
mm-hmm.
that would also be something to be aware of, to perhaps even, you know, go out for a lunch break or to have a humidifier where you are. Now, at herbal conferences, they frequently do something, which is to have like a panel discussion on one person's problem. And at one of the conferences, the panel discussion, which I was on, was about someone who had a much more aggravated sinus situation than what you're describing.
Mm-hmm.
And I always feel compassion for the people who offer themselves up for these panels, because basically they choose 3 or 4 people on the panel who definitely don't agree. So this person is getting different information. So one of the people said, well, your sinus infection is probably caused by mold in your house, and you need to completely redo your house or move. And I repeat this because it's not out of the question. Many people's sinuses do react to mold, and I don't know where you live. You would know better than I whether or not.
I live in Maine.
Yeah. Fairly moldy environment, eh?
Mm-hmm. But this problem started when I was living in Arizona, southern Arizona.
So it's probably not connected.
I don't think
to mold.
It is.
Oh. I totally hear you. The good news is that there was one thing we all agreed on, and that is that horseradish is the best herb for moving infections out of the sinuses.
Really?
Mm. Yeah. And you can just go off to the supermarket and buy a jar of horseradish. You can spread it on a piece of bread and eat it like that, or you can just eat it right out of the jar. Both ways are just fine. If you feel that there's a real infection going on in your sinuses, then echinacea, with the possible addition of 1 or 2 drops of poke root per day, would be a way to clear that infection.
Okay, thank you.
You are welcome. Thanks for calling.
Okay. Hi, I'm back now. All right. A lot of people here, not a whole lot of questions, though, tonight. So it's good. We're going to be able to get through some more of these email questions, because certainly a lot of people are writing in.
Okay.
All right. Next question. I read your articles many, many times, and I love them. I'm trying to learn to make my tinctures and learn the weeds and flowers I can use out of my backyard. My question is, I know you can use the purple cone flower for echinacea. Can I use the yellow cone flower as well and white, or is it just the purple we can use as an herb? Also, what proof vodka do I need to use, and can you use moonshine? I see the TV show where they make it and are selling it. Is that the same as vodka? Thanks, Ronnie.
All right, let's start here. Echinacea is a botanical name. And there are many echinaceas. Echinacea purpurea, purple coneflower, is one of the echinaceas. It is very commonly grown because it is very easy to grow. Echinacea augustifolia, large-leafed echinacea, is the one that I prefer. I consider it far more medicinal than the purpurea. The what you're calling the yellow coneflower might be a cultivar of Echinacea. And like most plants in the Asteraceae family, it's terrifically easy to change the color of the petals in Echinacea. However, the classic yellow coneflower is the plant named after me, or maybe I'm named after it, Black-Eyed Susan Rudbecka. And, of course, throughout much of the country, Black-Eyed Susan is flowering now. And throughout its range, the root of that Rudbecka, the botanical name, was used in the same way that Echinacea root was used. Echinacea has a far smaller range than Black-Eyed Susan does. Most of the studies have been done on Echinacea and on Echinacea purpurea. So I can't really tell you what would happen if you use the other ones. I can't even really tell you what would happen if you use the root of Black-Eyed Susan. Although we know it was used by native people, there are few to no herbalists who are using it at this point. So I'm not sure that that totally answered your question, but at least it's a start in that direction.
All right. I have another question on Echinacea. Let's see if I can grab that one here. Hold on. Okay. Could you please clarify the use of Echinacea, elderberry flower, and St. John's wort tinctures? I heard you say that Echinacea is antibacterial, and both elderberry and St. John's wort are antiviral. But when one is getting sick, it's hard to tell right away if it's bacteria or viral infection. So what to use first? For example, this year my child had two sudden onsets of fever, which in the first case turned into a cold, and in the second case turned out to be German measles. I gave him Echinacea tincture first, but as I understood, he had a viral infection. I was not sure if I could continue with Echinacea or switch to St. John's wort or elderberry. I thought Echinacea could still be useful to support the immune system and counter any complications, so I continued giving him both Echinacea and elderberry, and he recovered quickly. But I would like to have more understanding on how to use these tinctures and when. Do you hear, Monica Jean?
I do.
She's coming to the end of her rope here. Could you please speak on that? Thank you so much.
All right. Well, a cold is a viral infection. That's a rhinovirus. And the measles is a viral infection. So both of those infections were, in fact, viral infections. I don't find it so hard to tell the difference between a bacterial infection and a viral infection. So let's go over the differences, and hopefully this will make it a little easier for you as well. Bacterial infections almost always are associated with heat. So that could be a fever if the bacterial infection is a systemic infection. But it's rather rare that the fever occurs first in a systemic infection. In a more localized infection, the heat would be heat actually coming off the infection. Think about a cut on your foot or your arm that gets infected and how hot it feels. So heat, but not necessarily fever. Often preceding that heat, and always preceding the fever, there is inflammation, and that means redness. We think about the difference between an itis, which is an inflammation, and a viral infection. So if we have the flu, that's a viral infection. Now, although there can be a fever, it's not associated with inflammation, whereas if we have bronchitis, the itis, then that is a bacterial infection and it is associated with inflammation. Again, we can think back to that infected cut somewhere on our body, and it's hot and it's red. And sometimes there's even a pulsing sensation because of the inflammation. In fact, the third really critical part of a bacterial infection is that there is pain. And this, again, is not always present with a viral infection. In fact, it's often said that viral infections are basically pain-free, and that the pain we experience from a cold or the flu is not from the viral infection itself, but is from the immune system's reaction to that virus. So in other words, the flu virus does not cause chills or fever or muscle ache or bone ache or headache. All of those symptoms, which we think of as symptoms of the flu, are symptoms of the active effects of the immune system countering the flu. So those symptoms are from the heightened activity of the immune system, not from the flu. So the shortest and simplest way to say this is that bacterial infections cause symptoms, even while the immune system is working to counter them. Viral infections don't cause symptoms, although they have symptoms that are caused by the immune system. That said, it may or may not be useful to use echinacea in situations where there are viral infections. The Vogel company in Switzerland makes an echinacea tincture, which they recently did a double-blind study with, giving either the echinacea tincture or a placebo to groups of people during winter and keeping track of the duration, severity, and frequency of colds and flus. And there was a significant difference between the people who were actually being given the echinacea tincture and those who were getting the placebo. And, of course, you know, the authors of the study say that this can be generalized to any other echinacea preparation. It's only our echinacea preparation. But a small amount taken on a daily basis did seem to reduce the number of viral infections that those people got. It certainly has not made me start taking echinacea on a regular basis. Would that effect then kind of roll over, and if there was a viral infection, you could start taking echinacea? Not what they're saying, not what the study was saying. And the study was saying that it's kind of a build-up. And without being too long-winded about it, the immune system is best viewed as a seesaw or a teeter-totter. There are two arms to the immune system, and when one arm is activated, the other one literally gets less. And those two arms are the arm that deals with bacterial infection and the arm that deals with viral infection. So if we take anything that increases the activity of the part of the immune system that is dealing with bacterial infections, it very likely is going to depress the activity of the part of the immune system that is dealing with viruses. That said, herbs are not drugs. The herbs themselves are not antibiotics, they're not antivirals, they have those effects. So we're not taking a substance that is an antibiotic or a substance that is an antiviral. So acyclovir, an antiviral compound, acts in a profoundly different way than elderberry tincture. The herbs that you are talking about are generally considered safe to use. And so the short answer to your question is it really doesn't matter. Whatever you have on hand, that and some hot chicken soup will get your kids through those problems.
Thank you. All right, so we got about 25 minutes left before your guest interview this evening, so we can move through a few more of these here. I just love your Tuesday night show. I'm learning so much from you, and I want to thank you for your efforts in teaching the world about the wise woman tradition.
I'm 29. I was diagnosed with asthma when I was 5, and I was using my mother's inhaler since I was about 3. Asthma has been in my family for generations, and it was almost expected of me by my mother to have it. Currently, I'm taking a corticosteroid inhaler daily with a rescue inhaler on an as-needed basis. My asthma is fairly well controlled on this regime, but I'm concerned about the long-term effects of these medications and would like to get off of them. I currently drink nourishing herbal infusions, at least 5 quarts a week. I recently purchased some dried mullein. Should I be drinking mullein leaf infusion daily also, or only when I feel an attack coming on? Any advice? Greatly appreciated. Thank you.
What an interesting story. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. And it is so true that in addition to genetics, that there are family stories that we are expected to act out. And it would be very dramatic for you should you decide to change your family story and not have asthma anymore. And I just want you to know that that is a choice that is possible for you. Perhaps not right now, but at some point it certainly is. I'm thinking about an apprentice who came and spent 3 months with me. And she was definitely in the situation that you're in, if not worse, had asthma for her entire life, couldn't remember a time when she did not use inhaled steroids to be able to breathe, kept her little spray thing, her breathing thing with her at all times. As a matter of fact, would have an asthma attack if she didn't know where her sprayer was, simply from the anxiety of that. What did we do with her while she lived with us? Definitely mullein infusion. And in a moment or two, we'll go over specifics on making that mullein infusion. But a cup or two of mullein on a daily basis, in addition to your other nourishing herbal infusions, I think is a really excellent idea. We also encouraged her to start the day with some motherwort tincture because she was, in fact, quite anxious, and it was her anxiety that was causing her to breathe rather shallowly, and that shallow breathing was, of course, part of what was being called her asthma. Once she was less anxious, she was actually able to breathe more deeply. Now, I can't really explain to you the breathing exercises that we did with her, but we did a variety of different breathing exercises. In Tai Chi, and there's a special kind of breathing that we do, which is counting by twos. You may be able to pick it up from my explanation, and you may not. But basically, we inhale through the mouth all the way down to the pubic bone, and then we count 1, 2, and exhale. And then we inhale through the mouth, filling all the way down to the bottom of the belly, and then we count 1, 2, 3, 4, and we exhale, and then we inhale all the way down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. When we get to the next count after 10, it is 1, 2 again. So it sounds like this. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 1, 2. 1, 2, and so on. This sounds very simple. It is very simple, but it really makes changes in what's happening at the smallest structure of the breathing apparatus and in the largest structures of the breathing apparatus. So changing how the diaphragm relates to your breathing, and it's changing how much charge you're able to get into the smallest structure of the lungs. Of course, then we also did a variety of pranayama in our weekly yoga class so that we were, again, focusing the breath and using the diaphragm in ways that were quite unfamiliar to her. I frequently find that people who have asthma are not in touch with their diaphragm, the breathing muscle, and kind of that it goes into spasm when they're having an asthmatic attack. And that as we begin to train the breathing apparatus and to exercise the breathing apparatus, including the diaphragmatic muscles, that they're then able to feel when that muscle starts to go into a spasm. Motherwort, of course, prevents and cures muscle spasms. So keeping your motherwort at hand is a good idea. But as that diaphragm, as that muscle relaxes, it also stops impinging on a ganglia of nerves right where the diaphragm attaches to the rib cage in the front, which is kind of where the butterflies that sometimes flutter in one's so-called stomach live. And though that part of the nervous system, when it is pushed on by a diaphragm which is cramping and stressed, causes us to feel anxious and afraid. Well, there's your feedback loop, right? The diaphragm is in a spasm. It pushes on the nerves that make us feel anxious and afraid. When we're anxious and afraid, we breathe shallowly. We breathe shallowly. We don't get the oxygen that we need to the muscles. The muscles then cramp. And so it goes around and around and around. So training the diaphragm, training the breathing is a very, very important aspect for you also to look into. So let's talk about making mullein infusion. I like to harvest the mullein as it just comes into flower, which gives me the stalk and the leaf as well as the flower buds of the mullein. The flower buds and the stalk of the mullein actually contain a mild sedative. And I've gone into this rather lengthy explanation of what's happening in this feedback. You'll understand why a mild sedative is really important in a remedy. As asthma, you can buy at the stalk, and there's, I know around me, although the mullein has kind of gone through its flowering phase, the leaves and the stalk still look harvestable. So go outside and check it out. You might still be able to harvest this. I cut the entire mullein plant, hang it upside down to dry, and then I cut up, and sometimes I need, you know, big pruning shears or even a saw to cut up the stalk, and I weigh out an ounce, put it in a quart jar, fill it to the top with boiling water, put a tight lid on it, and let it steep overnight. The next day, this infusion has to be strained through a cloth, a linen napkin, a tea towel, anything that's actual cloth. Even a washcloth will work. But there's hairs in the mullein, especially if you've harvested it yourself, and you don't want them in what you're going to drink. So we're going to strain that mullein. It's going to be very black, dark, dark brown, rich-looking brown. And you'll have a quart of it, which will last well in the refrigerator for 5 to 7 days. As you want to drink the mullein, measure out about a half a cup of your mullein infusion. Put it in a saucepan and add approximately half a cup of milk and a teaspoon of honey to make mullein milk. I've had quite a few people tell me that once they get used to drinking mullein milk first thing in the morning, they just don't want to go back to drinking anything else. And at the Green Goddess Apprentice Week, we have one of the 5 main herbal infusions each day. And then, of course, because it's 7 days, we have 2 more days. And we serve a variety of different infusions on the last 2 days, or maybe 10 to 12 different infusions. And mullein milk, we always have to make 3 or 4 times more of it because it is the one that people absolutely love. It's really delicious. The cup of mullein milk is most effective if it's taken on a daily basis for 6 to 8 weeks. Could you take more of it than 1 cup a day? Yes, you could do even as much as 2 or 3 cups a day. It would not be a problem. I will tell you that by the time this apprentice left here, after she'd been here for 3 months, eating a whole foods diet, doing breathing exercises, drinking nourishing herbal infusions on a daily basis, and drinking her mullein milk, she had no idea where her inhaler was. Mullein reteaches the cells of the lungs what they need to know to work.
Yeah.
Perfectly.
I have, we have about 15 minutes left, and there's, I think, someone who wants to ask a question, so I'm going to open up the line for them. In the 714 area, did you have a question for Susan?
Yes, I do. Hi, Susan. Gosh, I didn't realize I missed your whole show today. I've been catching up on your archives. I have, and they're wonderful, thank you. I have a cyst in my breast. It's and I'm wondering if there's anything that can draw it out of the breast, a herbal poultice of some kind.
Is the cyst large?
It's about the size of a small lime, like the smaller ones, not the big, thick ones, like a larger than a large marble, though.
I was going to say, so fairly large.
Yeah.
Does it cause you pain or discomfort?
No.
Drawing a cyst out is usually quite traumatic,
mm-hmm.
and involves eroding the tissue above it. I do go into some detail as to a variety of ways that this can be done in my breast book. Do you have that book?
No, not yet. I've just found out about you, so I'm kind of
I don't mean to be pushy at all. I don't want to repeat myself if it's something that you already have.
No.
There are a couple of people in the United States who do work in this way. They, however, tell me that of the people who attempt to do the regime that would allow a cyst or a cancer to be extruded
mm-hmm.
through the flesh, that less than half of them get past the first week or two because the smell is bad and the pain
mm-hmm.
is extreme. Again, you're eroding the above tissue away so that you can then extract the cyst.
Mm-hmm.
Or surgery is far less painful. Far
do you think there's any possibility that it can dissolve? Then can your body dissolve it?
Yes. And I think that's a much better possibility.
Yeah.
After all, your body made that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I always figure if your body made it, it can unmake it.
Oh, good.
And then we don't have to worry about eroding the surface tissue or healing that and a bad smell and pain and all of that. But it takes a long time.
Uh-huh.
And it could take years. And that's why I asked you if it was causing you discomfort. Since it's not, we really do have the time to do that. And just about any kind of dissolving or discutient herb could be used. And I guess it depends on the individual person, but I always, this is one of the areas where I really like to play around. I get myself out, you know, a list of 10 or 20 different herbs that can be used to poultice the area, and I just start working with them. And then I usually get it down to one or two that I really enjoy working with.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like castor oil. Some people really like castor oil. I don't. It's messy. It's yucky. I don't like the smell of it at all. Tofu is a discutient. You can do a tofu poultice, and it is dissolving red clover oil and red clover blossoms. You can take the spent red clover blossoms from your red clover infusion and use those as a poultice, and they are very well known for dissolving lumps and things in the breast. Dandelion. All parts of dandelion have been used, again, to dissolve things in the breast. Comfrey, very powerful herb for dissolving things, especially for dissolving cysts, as is chickweed.
Are those, the dandelion and the comfrey, are those also for poulticing? And do they have to be fresh or dry?
The great thing about these poultices and compresses is that you can use the herbs in a variety of different ways.
Okay.
You had, for instance, dandelion flower oil.
Mm-hmm.
You could saturate something with that and apply that and even wear it all day long. Whereas if you wanted to sit down and do a poultice with the dandelion, just with dandelion herb material, the leaf or the roots. If you had dried, you'd want to rehydrate them by boiling them in some water before you use them. If you had fresh, you'd want to cut them up or macerate them in some way. And those kinds of big herb poultices are a little harder to tuck into your bra.
Mm-hmm. What
Whereas
do you think about mixing
saturated oil can be worn for many hours.
What about Susan. If you could, like if I had the fresh dandelion, the root and the leaf, and then I mixed it with clay and put that on there, do you think that might be a good idea or not?
Do you think if clay is dissolving?
No, but there is a lot of fluid in the cyst. That's why I was thinking maybe it might pull some of the fluid. Not just drag the whole. I'm with you on like the reasons not to take the whole, you know, draw it up out of the breast, but maybe just to get some of the fluid out of the cyst.
I will tell you that in general, I tend to believe that what's going on in the body is perfect. And that the more I mess with it, the poorer my results will be. So if what I'm doing is daily applications of various herbs with a visualization that I am melting the cyst away, to me, that's pretty non-invasive. If I were to use an herb that was melting things away and something that is astringing at the same time, to me, that would be a confusing message.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see.
It would be kind of like someone who's shaking their head from side to side and saying, I really like you a lot. Classic mixed message, right?
Right, exactly.
They're doing a side shake, which is a negation, right? It means no. And yet the words are saying something different. My experience has been that the psyche and the body are fairly simple and symbolic, and that the clearer and simpler a message that I can give my body and my psyche, the easier it is for there to be follow-through.
Sounds good. Sounds like a better approach here. I'm sure I've been sending it all kinds of confusion, so I'm really glad I got to talk to you. Thanks a lot.
Oh, I'm so appreciative that you shared with us tonight.
Okay.
All right.
So are you finished now with your show?
There's another 7 minutes, and so we'll of question and answer, and so we'll probably take another question, and then from 9 to 9:30, right here on the show isn't going to end, I'm going to be interviewing somebody who brings intuition into business situations.
Okay, I'm going to get on the internet and find you guys. Great.
Thank you.
Like,
we're not women.
Else.
All right, you take care.
Okay.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
All right, I'm here with you. Let's see if we can get a few more questions squoze in. I don't see anybody else asking. There are some people here with us, but nobody's asking. So let's see. I had a late miscarriage in November due to PPROM. I was 18 plus 4 weeks, and I was taking Vitex. Stopped it when I started my second trimester. I think it caused my progesterone levels to drop. I have had a positive pregnancy test. So I'm very early, only 4 weeks. This is after taking soy isoflavones like you would take Clomid. I'm terrified that the same thing will happen again. I'd like to find out if it would be safe to start taking RRLT and red clover now that I guess red raspberry leaf, is that what RRLT is? Now, should I take Vitex to keep my progesterone levels up? If so, I have a tablet, which is 1,000 milligrams. Is that dose okay? I'd like to buy the tincture. Would it be better to buy the tincture, and how many drops should I take of this? I look forward to hearing from you.
Could you read the very first part of that?
Yes.
Very unclear. Something about 18 weeks plus 4?
Yeah.
I had a late miscarriage in November due to PPROM. I was 18 plus 4 weeks. That
what
sounds like 22 weeks. 18 plus 4, 22?
Or is it 4 weeks and 18 days?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Very confusing to me.
Okay. Oh, yes, it's a UK email address. So, yes, that would be 18 days and 4 weeks, I guess.
Okay,
although,
that's what I'm thinking, too, which we would not really consider a late miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So it would be like about 7 weeks.
No, it says when I started my second trimester, I think it caused, I was taking Vitex and stopped when I started my second trimester. I think it caused my progesterone levels to drop. So it was further on.
Okay. So I don't know what the 18 plus 4 is at all. The second trimester would be around week 13 or 14.
Okay.
And the whole question seems very confusing to me. I'll see what I can do to answer it, but if you don't feel that my
Well, you only have 4 minutes, so you're going to have to get onto it if you're going
to. And then I just want to say,
better move into it.
Whoever this is, if she doesn't feel that my answer is adequate, I want to encourage her to write again.
Okay.
And get a little more information, and then I will be able to give her a better answer.
Okay.
So, to start with, I do not think that Vitex affects progesterone at all. At least I've never heard of Vitex affecting progesterone. What I have heard is that Vitex in tablets or capsules is not very effective at all, and that it does need to be used in tincture. Vitex is the herb that we think of for reducing the symptoms of PMS. And so if it had an effect on progesterone, what usually causes PMS symptoms is high levels of progesterone. And since Vitex eliminates PMS, it would lower progesterone. And if we stopped taking it, then progesterone would rise. But I don't think that Vitex has any direct effect on progesterone. What we think is that Vitex has an effect on the pineal gland and the pituitary glands. And these glands are the master control glands. But what we see with women taking Vitex is changes in luteinizing hormone and follicle stimulating hormone. And this is why Vitex is considered an excellent herb to be used by women who want to get pregnant. I believe that what you're doing here would be the same as my saying that the birds singing causes the sun to rise. It is certainly true that birds sing before the sun rises, but there's not a cause and effect relationship here. Does she say how old she is in the letter? As we age, miscarriage becomes far more common. And at this point, we believe that approximately one-third of all pregnancies end in miscarriage, some so early on that the woman may not even be aware of it. So I personally don't feel that a miscarriage is anything other than a woman's body saying, not that one. I don't think this had anything to do with whether or not you were taking Vitex. And I personally wouldn't suggest that a woman take Vitex when she is pregnant. But if you do have this very strong belief that the Vitex, the withdrawal of it, was what caused your miscarriage, then you would certainly have a similarly strong belief that taking the Vitex would keep the pregnancy. And that brings us up to 9 o'clock. And we're looking for Veronica, who should be calling in from the 310 area code. If you haven't already, Veronica, press 1.
Hi.
Hi.
This is Veronica. It's 610 area code.
Oh, okay. Not on the sheet that I was given yesterday.
Sorry.
Okay. Veronica Drake is here with us, and she's an international intuitive business consultant. In fact, Veronica Drake is the go-to expert for spiritually inspired women business owners. Veronica Drake specializes in helping her clients build a brand and develop a marketing message. Veronica Drake's unique combination of intuition, sass, and humor helps her help clients build businesses with their own uniqueness. She can quickly see blocks. She can allow clients to move effectively to the next level of their business. Veronica is a featured contributing author for in-print and online publications, a respected guest on many radio shows, and is creating a new standard when it comes to business development. Veronica Drake has redefined the industry by weaving the traditional business model with the world of metaphysics. Welcome to the Susan Show here at Women's Radio and to Blog Talk Radio with Susan Weed, Veronica Drake.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, goodness, what a lot of interesting things that you are doing. Can you start by telling us what the traditional business model is?
Sure. When we think about building businesses, we think about all of the things that we were taught that we must do, the traditional business plan and the traditional behind securing the capital and, you know, kind of the old school of marketing, you know, I call it the good old boys network, you know, back in the day. There are things that we have to or must or is in our best interest to hold on to when it comes to that aspect. But we're blending a different energy with it, and that's what I bring in.
So I'm a little unclear as to what you mean by marketing through the old boys network.
Mm-hmm. So there's an old way that, you know, marketing has always been about relationships. And, you know, but it gets lost in translation when people are thinking about what it is they have to sell, what it is that they want to give away. You know, marketing is really about who you're talking to, and it really is about relationship building, and it's about the possibilities that develop when two people connect and become trusting of each other. And have a mutual respect, and that happens through your words, which is your copywriting, how you speak. It's your brand. It's everything, and it's a softer, gentler approach.
The longer bones, the taller ones, with a chamber like this, but then the smoke goes into that chamber.
Is that you, Veronica?
It's not my phone. No, I can hear it, but I don't know what it is.
Okay, we have an interesting ghost telling us something about color.
I heard that.
Yeah. Talk about metaphysical here.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So, in what way do you add metaphysics to this traditional model?
Sure. I bring the gift of intuition to the surface. I actually teach my clients how to tap into and how to trust their intuition and how to become dependent on it rather than outside sources so that they can develop that relationship with themselves, which creates a securer feeling when they go out into the world, but also allows them to create from a space, an energetic space, if you will, because I also work with energy, that brings in the positiveness and the higher level vibration. And so I there's a finesse to putting the two worlds together without being perceived as woo-woo. I'll use that term.
So you say that wealth cannot be pursued, it can only be attracted. Can you explain that to us?
Yes. That is, again, being certified in the law of attraction and living the law of attraction and understanding that as we are and as we think, we attract. When you begin to think thoughts of positivity and you begin to develop a mindset about wealth, you will also vibrate at a level that brings wealth to you. The more you chase after wealth, the more likely you are to have a mindset that's not vibrating at a high level, not bringing the energy back to you. And a quick example of that is when I first started my business, and I think a lot of new business owners can relate to this, we invest, you know, our time, our money, our sweat, our blood, our tears, and we want the money back. And so we begin to build on this premise of, okay, so here's my dollars, here's, you know, I need to make this to pay this, and that's part of the model, the old school model. But where it's new is when we bring in this, it's not about the money, it's about the thoughts about the money. And so when we begin to think about wealth and how we can attract it, we begin to vibrate at a higher level as opposed to the low level of desperation, have to pay the bills.
So we can't be desperate about the bills.
No, no. Desperation is a very low vibrating energy, and everything is energy. You know, we're all, our bodies are energy, MRI, you know, have an MRI, see your energy. Your thoughts are energy. And when you put a thought out that says, I'm in lack, I'm in scarce, you know, there's not enough. When is more going to come? I don't have what I need. You begin to attract more of that. And so when you vibrate in a low level in desperation, you're just bringing more of it on yourself. And as business owners, we all are guilty of it. I'm still guilty of it. I like to say I visit it, but I don't reside there because I understand how to bring it back.
So if you were in a situation where they were saying that you weren't going to have internet access anymore, and they were turning off your phone, and they were turning off your lights. You wouldn't be desperate.
Well, that's an interesting question because, you know, for a lot of years I struggled with that part of it, not having my phones turned off, but I questioned it, and I thought, well, how can this be? And the reality is you have choices. And so, okay, so they're going to turn your lights off. They're going to turn your utilities off. They're going to turn your internet off. What's the first thought we go to? We're conditioned to go to the first thought of panic, of desperation, of fear. And the reality is when you act from that perspective, you're not looking at it in a way that's going to help shift everything around. We always have choices. We may not like our choices, but we always have choices. And so then I would go all the way back to, you know, what happened to put us in this position. And believe me, a couple years ago, the book came out. We all know The Secret. And one of the things I thought about with the book was, well, really, we're not hammering home the inspired action piece behind the book. You know, no way am I implying that you can go say, this is what I want, let me vibrate at a high level, eat bonbons and lay on the couch. It's not going to happen. You have to put the inspired action behind it. And inspired action comes because you have free will. You have the free will to choose.
And so what kind of choice do we make if we're in that situation that we've just pathetically made?
Well, the reality of that is you can choose to look at the power going off, and you can say, here I am, I'm in the corner, what am I going to do now? Or you can choose to say, what's the plan I'm going to put in place? Because I'm going to go back to the business aspect of it. When women come up upon these challenges in their businesses, they have the option of curling up, and I've been there and I've done that, or they have the option of saying, okay, I've done that for a couple of minutes, maybe an hour, maybe a day, and now I'm going to choose to do something different. And so what that is something that has to come to you, and it has to be brought to your attention. There has to be a moment of silence, a moment of connection. And remember, the metaphysics of this is bringing in the idea that we're all connected to something bigger. So this isn't just something that you wake up and you say, I'm going to know this, because I think until you're taught, until you get the consciousness of it, it's not something that you can access easily.
So there's a process by which this way of thinking can be taught.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And can people find that at veronicadrake.com?
Yes, it's veronicadrake.co, and I think that one of the things I do is I teach the intuitive voice method, and what that is really being able to tap into your inner knowing, tap into that core place where I like to say all of your answers reside. You know, we spend so much time looking to other people for our answers that we get lost in everybody's decision about who we are and what we should do, that we forget, or perhaps we don't even know, we weren't taught that we can tap into something bigger than we are, and it's already inside of us. And that's the core of the work that I do when it comes to helping women create their own economy.
So when you say women creating their own economy, how is creating their own economy different than, and how is it similar to, being an entrepreneur and creating their own business?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, can a woman create her own economy if she's working for someone else?
You know, that's a great question. And when I created this and this part of my business, I had in mind that I wanted women to be free and independent and not have to be at the mercy, if you will, of someone else holding the purse for them. Now, having said that, I realize that there is a reality behind feeding the kids and putting a roof over their heads and doing all of the day-to-day things that maybe a single mom has to do. But the other side of that is, if there's a dream and she realizes that there's a dream and she has woken up to this purpose, I want to empower these women to understand that it is doable. I was one of those women. And I decided that I wasn't going back to the choice that I made, I decided that I wasn't going to go out and work for someone else. I've always been a square peg in a round hole, and it just didn't work for me. I was successful, but I felt miserable.
And so you decided you weren't going for that misery. You were going to create a business yourself.
Right. And let me be clear and say that there was some misery associated with that, because everything is trial and error. You know, you have to fall down to stand up. But again, that goes back to that choice. I can lay in the corner, and as I have done, because we're human, and I felt sorry for myself, and I played the victim, but I understood how to bring myself back up. There was a point in my life in 1996 when I went to end my life. I didn't want to live anymore. I had had an indiscretion in my life, and I was ashamed, and I just thought I had no business being alive. Prior to that, I had had a very tumultuous upbringing, a schizophrenic mother, an alcoholic father. And I didn't know that there was something bigger than me. I was never raised with the word God or the idea of something bigger than me. I had no clue. So when I went to take my life in 1996, I had an experience that was just different than anything I'd ever felt. And it put me on a path to search. It opened my eyes. I didn't know what I was looking for, but it put me on this path. I'm naturally curious, and so one question led to the next, to the next, to the next, and I began my exploration into self, into soul, and it was a process. You know, it was about 15 years in the works, all of this spiritual evolution, self-evolution. So I didn't just wake up one day and say, okay, here I'm going to create a business. There was something in me that inspired that.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that that's very important. I find that that women often look at me and see me as a successful businesswoman, which it's true, I certainly am, mm-hmm. and somehow that it happened overnight.
Right.
And it doesn't. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. I started out a welfare mom, a single welfare mom.
Mm-hmm.
I started teaching because I didn't have the money to buy my daughter shoes.
And so eventually you found the dream, you found a different or a variation of the dream. You know, you taught, you got the money, but you're kind of rowing your own boat and you're doing your own thing. And so I think you really get that whole process of, which is exactly what I teach. And I use that word lightly because that's something that when the student's ready, the teacher appears kind of thing, like somebody comes to me because they have an inkling of something. I am no way do I take credit for, you know, oh, here's the light switch, let me turn on your dream. I don't do that.
Right, but you can point out where those sources of power are so that people can turn on their own light switches, shall we say.
Yes, thank you for pointing out that. Yes, that's correct.
Because often, as you so clearly said of your own life, we don't even have any idea that there could be light, let alone a light switch.
Amen. There have been a lot of dark days. A lot
really?
Of dark days.
Oh, you're kidding. And once you get the light on, there's actually a door.
You know, that's a great way to put it. And, you know, it's like through the crack is how we see the light, you know? So I always think about, like, I had this beautiful piece of pottery, you know, and it cracked, and I still use it because it still holds itself together, but I look at the crack, and there's, like, pieces of it where you can just kind of see it's not quite as solid as it used to be, and, you know, you can see the light. And it's just like on a wing and a prayer that it's holding together, and amen, I've been there.
Right. And I think that it also, you know, bears repeating that you're not talking about some kind of Pollyanna, everything's good.
No. Nope. No.
Actually saying things can be terrible. And doing it for yourself, well, hey, it means you don't have a boss. No, it means you work every single moment of your life. Unless you really make sure that you have some division. You know, I often say to women who want to be entrepreneurs, you must from the very beginning set aside some time every single day to do something useless.
Mm-hmm. I
because
agree.
In this way you retain your soul.
Oh, beautiful. Beautiful.
For me it's working picture puzzles.
It's what? I'm sorry?
For me it's working picture puzzles.
Well, that works a lot out there. It's got the mind going. It's got the creativity. It's got a lot of stuff going on there.
It gives me something to focus on while my creative mind can really churn things.
And I love
right.
my hands in the dirt. I love Mother Earth.
Yes.
I love to touch the soil. I love my flower gardens and my herbs.
Well, of course, that's the work for me. So that can,
yeah. Yeah, you need to go do the picture puzzles.
Right. something different. But I find that frequently that women are very severe with themselves and that they don't schedule in fun time at the beginning because they think, oh, I'm going to work 25 hours a day here for the very beginning time. And then it becomes a habit and they can't give it up.
Yeah. And you'll burn yourself out. And, you know, here's my thing really quickly if I can share with you. One of my careers was in nonprofit. And I left a very successful career in management, a very lucrative career in upper management, went into work nonprofit because I was going to, quote, unquote, save the world, okay? So I went into nonprofit. Meanwhile, my world was falling apart. I got divorced, all the crap hit the fan, whatever, you know, all that. But there was a group of kids that came in, and this little boy looked up at me, and he was the cutest thing, and he had the big brown eyes, and we were having some sort of food over at the organization, and he said to me, Miss Ronnie, they used to call me, Miss Ronnie, I am so thankful that I'm going to eat with you tonight. He said, because sometimes I just don't eat. And right? I mean,
oh.
I have to excuse my, I have goosebumps now. I went home that night and I just said, I sat there and I prayed and I just said, what in the hell is this about? Like, what is going on here? And I just said, God, he needs, where's his angel? And I heard very clearly, you are his angel. And I didn't know the impact. I didn't know what that meant when I heard it. I thought, okay, I gave the kid a hot dog, all right. But that's not what it meant. Because now I'm teaching women how to consistently build income to feed their kids.
That's right.
And that's what I do.
You're really, really being an angel.
I didn't get it. I didn't get it, though, at that moment, in that context. I was angry. It's like, how can this kid look at me and say, I'm hungry? No, that shouldn't happen.
Mm.
But I get it. I get it. I get it.
Yeah. You know, when you're sitting there with a small pile of money and you have to figure out, you know, what are you paying?
Yep.
Yeah, you make your choice and go along with it. One of my apprentices, basically did what we're talking about. You know, she, you know, kind of became her self-made woman so that she could make enough money to take care of her kids. When her kids were grown, they said, you know, Mom, really, we didn't want you to make that money at all. We really just wanted you to stay home and take care of us.
Oh. Yeah.
So I also mentioned that to women, too. It's like, how much of this, even your desire to attract money, how much of it is you? And how much of it is your thinking that there's things that you need that maybe you don't need?
You know, that's a great point, because I've been places in my life where I've had it. And I could buy, you know, the $200 shoes without thinking about it. And I've been places in my life where I have $1.34 in my checking account and major overdrafts and $70,000 in debt. I've been in both places. And what I realized is, you know, when I counted my black pants in my closet and I had 35 pairs of black pants, it was like, I need a program. What? You know, I have pared down because I've realized it's not about stuff. Stuff doesn't matter. People matter.
Correct. There's certainly a minimal amount of stuff that most of us want.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But beyond that, it becomes a trap.
Absolutely. And we get lost and we spiral and we create this illusion that, you know, the other thing is we all have a story. You know, think about the story we're born into. If you're a girl, we call you Susie and you wear pink and you go through life with that story. And if you're a boy, we call you Bobby and you wear blue and you play with trucks and we tell you that story. And women, part of their story is,
so,
you know
that 100 years ago, boys were dressed in pink because it was thought to be a warlike color, and girls were dressed in blue because it was calm.
Well, that was a story. I think I fit that story. I was always playing the tomboy.
There you go.
The reality is we're taught as women. I know for me, growing up with my father, the Fred Flintstone thing, I call it, women don't go to college. They marry men that go to college. You're never going to be smart enough. I had so many stories in my head. And here's the deal. You only believe what you know. And until I realized there was another way to believe, I kept giving life to that story. And that's what a lot of women do.
They give life to the story that they have been given.
Right.
Because it's the story they know. But you, Veronica Drake, can help them see what their story is and give them what I call the platform to choose change if they want it.
Mm. Beautiful. Yes. Yes, that's exactly what I do.
You don't start off with a view of a perfect woman and you're going to turn everybody into this perfect woman.
Is there one? No.
Oh,
no.
There's unique individuals. This is, you know, I teach about the wise woman tradition, and I say the scientific tradition measures and fixes. And this is what you're calling the traditional business plan.
Right.
And then the heroic tradition cleanses and balances. And we might call this the New Age business plan. But the wise woman tradition nourishes the wholeness of the unique individual. And this is, to my mind, exactly what you're doing.
Thank you. That was beautifully said. That was well spoken, yes. That was very eloquent, and yes, that is what I do. I marry both of those worlds. And I believe you can have it all. You know, statistically speaking, I'm not supposed to be where I am. You know, I'm supposed to be a product of whatever I came from, but I chose not to be. It wasn't easy. By any means, it wasn't easy, but I made the choices I made, and I get the results I get.
And you are now offering to help other women find those choice points.
Yes, absolutely. Don't feel stuck. Don't feel like you have to do it all alone. And it's just a thought. You know, our feelings turn into thoughts, and our thoughts become our actions. But what happens is we forget to feel. We're so busy that we forget to feel. And that's what my intuitive voice method does. It introduces you. It reintroduces you to your feelings. How are you doing today? I'm doing great. Well, what does great feel like? Talk to me. Tell me what great feels like. And then let's accept all parts of us. You know, women, I love her because she's this, this, and this, but ooh, I don't like that piece of her, so I'm going to hide her. Let's accept all parts of us. We were all created by the same creator, all parts of us. There is no bad or good or right or wrong.
The part that wants to hide under the bed when bad things are happening is just as valid as the part that says, I am Wonder Woman. I will take care of it.
Amen. And we need to love her. We need to love equally our whole selves. And that's not something that's easily done for women.
No, when I finished my first book and sent it to the printer, a friend came in and she found me literally in bed with the covers over my head. And she said, what are you doing? I said, I was just struck with the thought that someone might read my book. And then I was struck with the thought that they might actually take my advice. And I thought, this is pretty bad.
Wow. That's powerful. Powerful.
That you know, we must allow those parts of ourselves to have expression too.
Mm-hmm.
That say, oh my gosh, I'm really frightened. Because what I find and what I teach is that that when we allow those parts a place at the table and when we feed them nourishing food, they join in the conversation. When we throw them in the dungeon, they cause a riot.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's really, you know, radical acceptance at the deepest level possible, all parts of us. And, you know, I love the saying, become independent of the opinions of other people. You know, I'm 50. I'll be 51 in October. So anybody listening to this, I want you all to hear that just because I didn't start waking up until I was in my late 30s, you know, it can happen at any time for any woman. You know, when the student's ready, the teacher appears.
Veronica, I think you can't hear the cues, so let me tell you that we have 80 seconds left.
Okay, great.
And this thing shuts down when it shuts down. There's nothing I can do about it. We have 80 seconds. That's it. So we now have 60 seconds. Again, I can hear the cues, but you can't. So what do you want to leave our listeners thinking about?
I would love to have you come over and visit my site at veronicadrake.co and just realize that there is a possibility that maybe there's something more out there for you, and it's within your reach.
Thank you, Veronica Drake, for being here with me, with Susan Weed at Women's Radio. Thank you, listeners, and thank you, Veronica Drake, at veronicadrake.co, for helping me to reweave the healing cloak of the ancients. Green blessings, everyone, until we speak again.